Welcome back to Beholder Should Know on a D&D podcast. Today I am here with Zub the Mad.
I am quite Zub and I am quite mad, yes.
And we are just talking about D&D overall, but like a little bit more into the specifics of like character creation and the different races and subclasses, because there are so many options now.
Yeah. My understanding is that we're staying to core. We're not doing any homebrew stuff.
Correct. Homebrew is an option, and I highly recommend it once you have got the gist of, you know, the basics. There are some very fun homebrew classes out there, though there are also some very broken homebrew classes. So you just need to be careful.
Yeah. Looking at you, half dragons.
With that being said, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your experiences with D&D?
Greetings and salutation, Beholder Believers. My name is Zub the Mad, and I am the curator, DM, and Eldritch Priest of the podcast, The Broken Lords Tabletop Podcast. So I run the Broken Lords podcast. You can find us on Twitter, at Lords Broken, and we have a link tree. It's linktree, linktr.ee/thebrokenlords. And that's where all our stuff is. Join our Discord. Join the cult. I mean, it's not a cult, but join it.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Anyways, I'm giving it over to the Master of Ceremonies for tonight.
I like that title. All right, so the basic of the basic, just player handbook rules. You got your normal classes, Barbarian, Bard, Cleric, Druid, Fighter, Monk, Paladin, Ranger, Rogue, Sorcerer, Warlock, Wizard.
Yes.
So you could break those down even further. There are people who say particular classes are less than superior or worse than others.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hate against Rangers, a lot of hate against Warlocks too, actually. I kind of see it, but don't see it. Like,
I'm a Ranger and Warlock apologist. I like both those classes.
I loved my Ranger when I played it, and I'm about to play a Warlock, so I'm so excited. But like, the go-to I see where people who want to like be super powerful is like Rogue. Like, that's the one that I see a lot of people who are like, I like to do all the damage, Rogue.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in D&D land that is more dangerous than a man very determined with a knife.
It's fair. And a high stealth check.
Yes.
The one thing that I will say that I don't like anymore with races and class combination is the stereotypical ones, like the Goliath Barbarian, for example, the Gnome Wizard.
The archetypes.
I guess, I know I didn't want to focus on optimization, but like, those just bore me.
The Half-Orc Barbarian.
Yeah, exactly.
The Human Fightar.
It's just like, that's been done so much. We get it. It works. Why not bring in a half-orc wizard just for funsies? Like, who cares if it's not optimized?
Yeah. I think there's a really weird gamification aspect inside the human brain that's like, I need to win at this thing. And it's like, but it's collaborative, though. But I need to win at the thing, though. And then we go into these pathways of optimization in a game that's supposed to be collective storytelling. So,
yeah, I think it's good to have a character that does something good. Like, if you're just useless all around, then for a ongoing campaign, that might not be feasible. I think you should be good at something. You don't necessarily have to be good at everything. You don't have to be super fucking broken at that something.
Yeah, sure. Like, having the stereotypical dude that just is amazing at tripping people, and that's all they do, like C3.5.
Yeah. So like the bard, for example, I love to play bards that don't follow the stereotype of you use music against your foes. Why does a bard have to be a musician? Why can't they be a storyteller? Why can't they be a wordsmith? Politicians are technically bards in a way. They're charismatic and can use their words for evil. A businessman,
yeah,
could be a bard.
It's true. Power of selling.
Yeah, they know how to con their way into your hearts. Like, that's one of the reasons why when I played Rissa for Behold Clearlight, I specifically told the DM, like, I do not know how to play an instrument. Can I have something else as my focus?
Yeah, fair.
Like, it doesn't make sense for her because she never would have learned. She learned how to be a businesswoman.
Yeah. One of my favorite characters I ever played was a young halfling named Dustin Crimes, who was part of the rap group Lethal Punctuation.
I love it.
And he was a bard. And all he did was have rap battles with people.
I love it. Recently, we just had a one-shot that was released for One Page Mage. We did a gnome adventure, like go find a gnome adventure. And we had two characters specifically, but I think all of the characters fitted a little bit, that were just definitely not optimized at all. But it was the funniest shit ever. I had such a blast in that game because we had a bard that was like, they had like a 13 charisma.
Oh, God.
And they played the gong as their musical instrument that they also used as a shield.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just so funny because, like, when he succeeded, it was fantastic. But when he didn't, you were just like, okay.
Yeah.
But it was funny.
Like, why do we bring you places?
Then the other character that I really loved was a warlock Genasi, which is from later books in the series, but they played the newer genie warlock subclass.
Oh.
And they went with their warlock was patron was their father. And it was,
so you're just asking dad for favors all the time.
He would just talk into a whiskey bottle and go, "Hey dad, can you send me some more spells when I'm resting?" Like, that was how he got his short rest spells back.
What I do deserve such an idiot son.
And it was like perfection, because I'm like, this is hilarious to me and I love it. And then I did play a stereotypical gnome wizard, but I played a super anxious gnome wizard that was just like, what are we doing? No, we have to do this specifically. The book says this is how we do it. What you're doing it wrong.
I like doing that too, where it's like you have like something where you kind of do something that's kind of archetypical, but then you put a spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like playing a tiefling warlock, played a tiefling warlock named Mazim Ozan, who was trying to be an investigative reporter, but ended up just being a serial smut novelist because that's the only way she could make money.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. So, like, having those conventions, sure, you can be a half-orc barbarian, but, like, you know, having that additional twist is always good to have.
One of my favorite characters to play, one that I don't have to think about, that I don't have to, like, get into character because it's just, like, a release, basically, is my monk, Kalishtar Monk. She's really, really, really good at punching things and dodging things. Really good at those two things. That's about it. Like, yeah. Ask her to do anything else, and she's gonna be like, but she's gonna try. She's gonna fuck it up. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, she tries to be the charismatic one all the time. If you're like, just stop it. Go back. Yeah. Like, she's good at deceiving, but that's about it. Like, she can't persuade for shit. And she's like, no, we actually are doing good and we were actually helpful. And they're like, roll persuasion check. Like, fuck, no.
It's always interesting to think of, like, remember, like, 3.5 min maxing, where you just had, like, those archetypes, but they were, like, ridiculous. Like, you could do things, like, with, like, a hulking hurler where you could get so strong you pick up mountains if you just put all your skills into being really good at throwing things.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I wasn't a huge fan of 3.5. Like, that's what I started on.
Yeah.
I remember, like, my ninja assassin first character that I played, but I don't even remember her name, but she was just pure evil, just wanted to, like, kill things and just caused chaos, and only was in the party because one other player was also evil and thought it was hilarious that my character was just invisible following the group.
Oh.
And causing problems.
I see. Yeah. It's interesting to think what those characters would do within the realm of that world, because they're only really good at one or two things and everything else is just, you know, dumped. So, I don't know.
And then, like, now it's become a thing where if you just have straight 13 and 14s, like, some people are upset about that.
Yeah.
And like, I get it. It's kind of, it could be kind of boring because you're like average, but like, actually you're above average. Like, you're pretty decent at everything. You're just not really good at something.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like a gifted kid in high school
that goes to college and realizes they weren't really that gifted.
Yeah, exactly.
That's... Oh, I feel called out.
Is that a little too close to the bone? Am I cutting a bit too deep here?
I feel so called out right now. It's like, no, yeah. I didn't have to study in high school. What the fuck is this shit?
We laugh to keep from crying. Okay.
Roll a d20 to not cry.
Oh no, I already failed. I have such a negative penalty to it. Oh yeah. Anyways, we were doing classes.
We were. What is your favorite class to play if you like just first one that pops off your head?
I'm slapping an invisible table. Imagine warlock. I always play a warlock. I love warlocks. Anyone that says that warlocks are garbage because the only thing they have is Eldritch Blast doesn't know how to do anything aside from just being herder fighty man, and you can fight me on that.
I am actually very excited to... I'm playing a multi-class character, which I don't usually do. And I won't give too much away about it, but it's going to be a rogue warlock. And that's all I know so far, because I haven't actually like dived into how that's going to fucking work. But it makes sense for the character's story.
Yeah, I mean, if you take the Arcane Trickster feat, you could probably actually add sneak attacks to things, and that would be a kind of a problem.
That is fair. I have to look into it still, because like, I know that I want to end up being a warlock, but I don't think she would have become a warlock as early as she would have, and we're starting at like a higher level.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be funny because she won't actually know who her patron is.
Oh, that's great.
She's just going to be like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are, but whatever. I have powers now.
It's always good to have a patron that's completely anonymous. Like, I was playing another game where I didn't know my patron until 6 sessions in.
Mm. On the game that I play it on Tuesdays, I just made a new character, and it's a cleric who does not know who her god is because she lost her memory.
Oh.
About 5 months ago. She also doesn't know who her family is. So there's a lot of stuff that she doesn't know, and I can't really go into detail.
Yeah, fair.
But I know who they are, and it's real interesting. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, fair.
But it's a really fun concept. Like, she's only been in 2 sessions so far. She was a servant for the last 5 months, and she stole the bag of holding from the person who was her master or whatever when he died, and she reached in to take out his armor, and then armor came out that looked like it looked familiar, but she doesn't know why, and it fit her perfectly, and it wasn't the armor that he had, so she's a little confused. So basically, I got all my shit back. So then when she got in her room, she turned the bag upside down, and she found this necklace, which is basically her symbol, and it looks familiar and it feels familiar, but she cannot place why, and it's not an obvious symbol of the god, because then it would give it away.
Right, yeah.
But it's a beautiful, like, ice crystal almost, where it looks like a sun bursting from the top. And she just knows for some reason that that's really important. And then there's, like, little clues. Like, she finds a vial of blood in her bag, and she doesn't understand why.
Oh.
This part, the players, other players know, so I can say, but she is a blood cleric, which is a homebrew class.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to be really interesting the first time she does her channel divinity, which is blood puppet. You basically, anybody who has blood in them, so any humanoid, mm-hmm. dead or alive, she can control one of them, raise them up, and have them attack somebody.
Oh. Ooh.
If they're dead or unconscious, they do it automatically because they fail their save automatically.
Oh god, it's like blood bending from Avatar.
Yep.
And
I am so excited for when that moment comes where she just like freaks out and does something instinctually, and then is like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I cannot wait till we get in a fight and that happens.
Yeah. Man, that whole thing was super dark. when you really think about it, like, having that level of mastery over someone, that's really screwed up.
What's funny is, I can't tell you, fuck. I will tell you after, remind me after the show, and I will tell you so it's not like a spoiler for...
All right.
But
my zips are sealed.
Yeah. But back to characters. My favorite is, honestly, I always go towards Druid purely because I like to talk to animals and I want all the animals to be my friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Druids are pretty overpowered too when it comes to like end game stuff, but I absolutely fucking adore the fact that like every druid I will ever have will have to speak with animals no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, that could be conditionally useful too. Like, not only, you know, for the Dr. Doolittle fantasy fulfillment, but like, you know, being able to scout the local wildlife to figure out, you know, if you're tracking someone, you know, you can ask the squirrels or what have you to be like, hey, did you find this person? Did you see them going through the forest?
Mm-hmm.
Like, having that level of intel is super integral.
For me personally, when I never really use my wild shape as a fighting thing.
Yeah.
I always use it if I can, if I wild shape, if I play moon, I guess I should say, I always use it for, I'm a cat sneaking around. I'm a spider going up the wall.
Right. Yeah.
It's never, I'm a bear to attack.
Yeah.
Because technically you could just be tank druid and be awesome. Yeah. But
I think I've only played one druid in my entire life, and that was actually for a guest star. Like, yeah, it was Clurdy. Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to that DM. You had to listen to this for an hour and a half. I don't know how you would have done it. I'm already driving myself crazy.
Stuff of nightmares.
Yeah. It's literally because that character was, I was asked what my accent was, and in the spur of the moment, I just channeled Jiggle Billy from Aqua Teen.
Mm-hmm. That works. I don't usually do voices. I do inflections, like I change how they speak, but not their accent specifically, because I'm very bad at it. But also, like, I'm very much, if I hear somebody else's accent, I will just start doing theirs instead of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Then I will, like, lose it. I will be like, what the fuck was I actually using? Shit. Where did it go?
I was actually going to address the inflection part. Now, do you mean, like, different emphasis on tone, different emphasis on, like, if you're going to stress certain words?
Personality, mostly. So, for example, Rissa is very, or can be, depending on who she's speaking to, she can be very much proper, like, oh, hello, how are you doing today? I love that dress. It is absolutely stunning on you. But then 5 minutes later, go and go, hey, did you do any really cool shit? Like, I heard about a really good robbery down the street. Was that you? Good work, guys. Like, high five.
So using differentiations in tone to do a little bit of social espionage, so to speak.
Right. And like all my characters have a different, or I try to make them, like with the wizard I mentioned earlier, she was very anxious. She had a slight stutter where she's like, guys, I don't think we should do that. I think we should go slow and maybe, well, not too slow though, because we have a time limit. Like that's how she would talk. And then my monk is very abrupt and very like in your face. Like, who the fuck do you think you are? I'm just gonna fucking punch you in the face if you don't get out of my face right now.
Yeah.
Like, very in your face. But they all have the same voice. They all have the same like accent.
Right.
But it's just how they respond to things and their personalities and the tone, I guess, of their voice is the right term.
Yeah.
My favorite was the druid I did play, who was a hippie, and she was just super high and chill. So she talked pretty slow. And she's just like, hey, guys, like, can we just chill for a little bit? I don't know. Can we just get high? Is it time for a smoke break? Like, it's been like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's how I try to differentiate the characters, because I know that I can get that personality in my head without having to worry about an accent.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said on both sides of the coin, so to speak. Like having different inflections and also like messing around with the voice a little bit can be, it depends on your group and how, and the level of immersion that they have with the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played with some power gamers who are just all about the numbers, man, and they don't care about actually talking in character. Or, you know, like the people that are very thespian and want to do everything like this and make everything very dramatic and to the gallows with those numbers, those hypocritical things, those insignificant things. Those are secondary to the art, you know?
Yeah. I prefer the latter. Like, I love the rules. I love the nitty-gritty details. I love the fact that it's, like, all in a book somewhere that I can know that I'm doing it correctly. But if you're just saying, I hit, without telling me how you're hitting, it gets boring after a while.
Yeah, true.
It's like, okay, cool, you hit. How are you doing it? Like, right. My monk isn't just going to go, I punch four times. Sometimes I'll go, I run up and I, because he grabs my arms, I try to side sweep his legs and then I release the electricity from my arm wrap since he's grabbing right onto them and headbutt him in the nose. And like, it's all technically unarmed strikes, but.
Right, yeah.
Flavor wise, it's like I'm doing more shit than just that. A lot of times she'll like run and flip over somebody. This is my monk specifically, but.
Yeah, we have a term at the table that we use, which is pick your anime dex sequence. Usually after like a critical hit or something like that, I'll be like, well, describe me your anime death sequence. But yeah, anyways, characters. So yeah, I don't know. I think I'm more of the camp that like I like to change the way I speak. Not because I'm, well, yes, because I am a theater nerd, but like also in the sense that I think it adds something to the equation, so to speak, you know, like having a barkeep that just says like, yeah, what do you want in my voice, as opposed to what do you want? What do you why are you still here? I already served you. Go away. You know, having that level of added inflection to me kind of adds a immersion to it.
Oh, 100%. If I was better at voices, 100%.
Yeah.
I love it when characters have voices because those are the characters that immediately like click in your head and you have ideas. And Ryan for Clearlight does a really good job at those voices as the DM. A lot of the characters have specific tones and accents and voices and all of those things. And some of them just add to that character so fucking much. Like there's a character that I don't think has been introduced yet, but their name is Ozzy. And they're a mechanic and they're just like have this deep gravelly voice and they're like, yeah, I can do that, like that kind of I can't even do it, but it's just like the accent is just like you can picture a fucking half orc mechanic female just ready and rearing to go fix something, and I love it and I wish I could do it.
Yeah,
but I definitely was not a theater kid. I am not new to D&D, but new to the acting portion of it.
Yeah.
I was a band nerd.
I think players who've been in the game for a while are very much like the wargamey type, or at least come from a background of that. So hearing you say that, you know, that's... I feel like we're in the same camp here.
Yeah, when did you officially start playing? I know you mentioned 3.5. Is that when you started playing?
My first real official game, like... campaign, not more than one shot, or rather more than one shot, was actually White Wolf. We played a World of Darkness game. I don't know how familiar you are with that system.
I haven't played White Wolf, but I'm familiar with World of Darkness.
Okay. So, I mean, White Wolf's the company, but World of Darkness is the campaign setting.
Oh, okay, sorry.
This was OWOD, so that tells you how old I am. That's old World of Darkness, and we were doing like a bloodletting setting. And a lot of it was just, it was really cool because we had this setup where the DM was actually, what's the word for it? I used to be of the Judeo-Christian mindset, but like I've long since gone away from it. Someone that works under the priest of a local chapel, not an altar boy, master of ceremony. That's what it was. Okay. Sorry. Who was actually a master of ceremony.
I am not the person to ask.
Yeah. So one of the DM was actually a master of ceremony. And the chaplain, for some reason, decided that he would let us use the church for our game nights. And that brought a whole new level to it, you know, because we're talking about gothic horror and now we're inside an actual church role playing. So that was my first real game.
Mm-hmm. My first game was in 2003 in a small little gaming store. I do not remember the people I played with other than my best friend was there. It was her first game too. I don't remember my character at all, but I remember that it was 3.5 and I had evidently a lot of fun because I kept coming back for more.
Yeah.
I played 3.5 for a little bit and I tried Vampire the Masquerade around that time once or twice. And it was like they mixed it with Werewolf. So it was very confusing, but it was more focused on the LARP side of it versus the actual gameplay.
Oh, so it was like full on like wearing costumes and stuff.
They weren't wearing costumes, but they were like the game store was so small you couldn't actually play in there. So we played outside of the game store.
Oh.
But like it was to the point where like, oh, when you walked down this hallway, did you know you walked into my lair and I could kill you now? And I'm just like, wait, what? Who? Where was there a sign? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, vampires be like that.
And we're about to start a Vampire the Masquerade game for Beholder to No One on a new podcast called Dice Before Dawn.
Oh, what version?
Fifth edition.
Oh, I also like that edition.
Yes, so I'm very excited for it, and I'm very excited to play my new character. And I'm excited to try it from a perspective that isn't off-putting like the first experiences I had, and more focused on, like, yes, there's still rules in character creation and stuff like that, but it's also a heavy roleplay-based system.
Oh, yeah. The capital A angst in Vampire is omnipresent and permeable.
Mm-hmm.
So... no, they did a lot of good work on it.
Yeah, I was reading through the book when I was trying to understand character creation and stuff like that. But I played 3.5 longer, more so when I moved to, I lived in California for about 10 months and I played it there. And that's kind of where I started seeing the min-maxing side of it and started to understand the character creation a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I at that point, I had only been playing for 3 or 4 years. And I was like, why are you min-maxing it? Like, I hate this. Like, this is so fucking boring. What are you doing?
Yeah. And it really puts an onus back on the DM, too. Because then the DM has to come up with more broken encounters for you to deal with the brokenness.
Yeah. And at that point, I didn't understand how DMing worked either. So I was just like... and I think the DM was also a power gamer, too, so it wasn't, like, a huge shock for him. I just wanted to play with some people and eat at Denny's at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, the Denny's trips?
Yeah. Every weekend, Denny's for, like, 5 hours, sat in a corner playing D&D.
I'm surprised they weren't like, are you going to order anything else?
We ordered on and off throughout the night, but because we were out of the way and... we had the same waiter every time.
Oh, okay.
He was really cool. And he would like actually tell us how to get discounts on things. He's like, oh, you want that? Well, actually, if you order it like this, it's like $4 cheaper.
Oh.
And we're like, oh, awesome. Because then we would order more things and we would slowly order throughout the night.
Yeah, okay.
End up spending the same amount of money. But
that sounds great, actually.
It was a lot of fun. That's the one thing I do miss about California.
Yeah.
When I came back, I didn't know anybody to play, so I didn't play for a while. And I started to play again in 5th edition. 5th edition was just so much easier to get caught into and understand. Right. So while it's not necessarily my favorite game in the world, like lore-wise, 5th edition is the one I understand the best.
Yeah.
I feel confident DMing and... have been playing for a while and DMing for like 6 or so years now. So that's the one that I'm like, yeah, I got this. I know what I'm talking about.
Oh my God. Has it been out for 6 years already?
I think so.
Oh no. That makes me feel so old.
It was released 2014. Yeah.
Oh my God. 7 years?
Almost 7 years. September will be 7 years.
All right. Let's talk about characters so I don't feel old. Anyways, when you say character building, we're also considering the, you know, the character, the background, things of that nature.
Yep.
So what's your method? I have a specific method that I also use when I'm doing my writing, because I'm also an hopefully soon to be published novelist. So tell me what your method is.
For creating a character from start to finish type of concept?
Yeah, like coming up with like the character concept, what they're about, maybe not necessarily the crunchy parts of it, but like, you know, the personality, background, that type of stuff.
Honestly, I can go one of two ways. One way is I look for pictures. I look at pictures for inspiration. I find something I like. Like, perhaps I knew I wanted to play a mage mm-hmm. of some sort. And I use mage loosely. It's just like a magic caster of some sort. So I'll look at pictures of fantasy mages and look until I see something for inspiration. And then I start to try to imagine what that person would be if they were an actual character. On the opposite end of things, I am very much a player that will wait until everybody else has picked a character to balance the party out as best as possible, because I'm not always, but most of the time in a lot of the games that I've played, am the most experienced.
Right.
So I would rather a newer player be able to pick something they really, really are interested in playing and want to try, and then I'll just fill in whatever is needed. And then once I know what class I'm playing, I start to think of their background a little bit, like what's the concept of it and how that would fit appropriately. For the character that I'm going to be playing for the next, I won't give too much away, but the character I'm going to be playing for the game that's replacing Behold Clearlight, I'm playing as a NPC from Clearlight. I only know their name and what they look like and a little bit about their personality. And then I ask the DM for a little bit of background information on them. And I use that to create who she will become in her elder when she becomes older. Because she's a little kid in this game. So I was like, okay, well, what can I make from that? And she doesn't know a lot about herself. So I get to make that up and pick and choose what race she actually is, even though she doesn't know what race she is. And this character is completely homebrew, like 100% homebrew.
What was the decision that brought you to wanting to be a solely homebrew thing? You just wanted to see?
It fit better.
Okay.
The place that she's from, there's only one race that is from that place that is officially published. And I didn't like that race.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, like, I wanted to go with something different. So I talked to the DM about it and got permission and went and looked for other options that could fall into the same place that they're from. Found something I liked and that made sense a little bit and got the approval. And then for her class, I was originally going to go Hexblade Warlock, but we had so many melee fighters everybody else was planning.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, fine. I'll switch it up a little bit, and I did a little bit of thinking on it, and I realized that she does have a fascination with swords because of story reasons, so I decided to start her as a rogue instead, and then switch her into a warlock due to her past, and I don't know, I have to figure out how I'm going to get it to that point, mm-hmm. but I know who her patron's going to be, and I know, I think I know what homebrew warlock class I'm using, because again, none of the other ones actually fit based off the concept that I'm wanting. There's been times where like I found a class that looked interesting. Again, this was a homebrew one, but I found a plague doctor class and I was like, I want to play a plague doctor, and the DM's like, okay. I was like, cool.
What would that even entail? Like just having a handful of herbs and pretending to know things about medicine?
No, they were healers or herders. They could either you could go two routes. You could either go the healing route where you actually knew magic spells like clerics did, but I like to flavor it differently. Or you could go the plague route where you could infect people.
Oh, okay.
The class unfortunately wasn't completely built out.
Oh.
It only was up to a level 10. I got to play it a little bit and then the game eventually ended for other reasons. But I just knew I wanted to play a plague doctor. And in my mind, I'm like, well, what if I play like a character from olden medieval times where they're in a world where magic isn't necessarily the way they heal people, but salves and herbs and leeches and like things like that is how they heal people.
Oh, like a low fantasy world?
Right. Like magic was real. And in theory, I was casting cure wounds, but or lesser restoration. Oh, you have a hangover? Lesser restoration. But no, let me get Bob the leech for you. He is perfect at this and place it on your head. Give it an hour. You'll be fine. But yeah. I just cast lesser restoration. You don't have a hangover anymore. Mm. But flavor wise, she just was very experimental, I should say, with her ways of healing. And for flavor wise, I was like, okay, well, what kind of race would do something like that? What would fit? And I kind of was looking at lizard folk. And that made a lot of sense when I was reading through the lore a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, lizard folk makes sense. And then lizard folk also made sense because my best friend's character was a fire genasi. And we were going to play a married couple. And I thought it was perfect that the lizard folk would love the person who's always naturally very warm. Yeah. Because lizards like heat.
Yes.
So it just ended up working out that way.
Okay, fair enough.
How the character was created. And then I figured out everything else beyond that after this point.
Yeah, I used the Matryoshka method. So, you know those old, like, Russian dolls that, mm-hmm. like, there's one inside the other?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a layering technique that I actually learned from, I want to shout out a YouTube channel real quick that I have no affiliation with, Tale Foundry.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great channel. If you're even remotely interested in being a creative fiction writer of some kind, like, go subscribe. It's an endless treasure trove of knowledge and wisdom. But yeah, they enumerate a method called the Matryoshka method, where basically you get like a concept, which is the outer shell, and then you get like the world, and then you go deeper into it, and you kind of like layer it in. Like, there's, so like a logic chain would be like, they're scared because they experience this thing, because the world is like this, because they're, I don't know, I'm spitballing. Like, this person is scared, they're a very timid person, the world is very dark, there's not a lot of illumination, they saw their parents not get killed, but like get called away, mm-hmm. by an order that is very obsessed with maintaining light or whatever, so they have some animosity towards authority. And it goes from there. Like, you just logic chain your way into having a personality.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I have gone into characters completely blind without knowing who they are. Like, I had the character created. Their class and race and background was picked.
Right.
I figured out their personality as I was going. And that works very well for me, too. Because not all the time do I want to put in the research for a character. And I'll just go, yeah, okay, I'll play Clark. Here's the concept. Sure.
Yeah.
And then once I get into the character and start interacting with other players, I'm like, how do I want her to react to this? Okay, this is how she's going to react. And then slowly, like, a personality will form.
Yeah.
Have you ever created characters like that where you had the character designed and then thought of the personality as you went? Or do you have a good personality in place before you start the character play?
Well, it depends. So sometimes I have it like fully fleshed out in my mind. Like, I do that method I mentioned prior to this question, where I use that method. Sometimes, like in some games, like one of the games that we were doing, not recorded, was actually with another group that I play with. My character ended up dying, and I had to make another character in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
So I had to basically make a whole new character from scratch that was going to join the party during like an apocalyptic situation. Like, literally the world was collapsing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's the good that men do in the final hours of existence that make all the difference. That was basically the broadening theme about it. And I ended up making this barbarian that was very devoted to Jesus figure in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of made it as like, I kind of, sometimes when I'm like pressed against the wall, I kind of remix some characters. Like, my first character ever was Father Stephen O'Shea, who was a werewolf that didn't believe he was a werewolf and was devoutly Episcopalian and a priest. And when he found out that he was supernatural, he actually had a mild panic attack. And then he was reached out to by his tribe. And like, the whole running gag of it was just him getting phone calls in the middle of the night. And him going, not interested, as if he's like warding off a telemarketer. And I used some of that personality in that barbarian I made in 5 minutes, where it was, he spoke in a very bad brogue. He was very maudlin about the nature of his religion. And even though he wasn't a cleric, he was very devout while he was smashing people's heads because it was for the greater good. Sometimes you gotta have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and sometimes you have to make a peanut butter and fluff sandwich because you realize you're out of jam, so to speak.
Oh, now I want a peanut butter and fluff sandwich.
That's the power of storytelling, baby. Putting things in people's heads.
I haven't had one in so goddamn long.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I love concepts like that. One of my favorite concepts that I had that unfortunately I didn't get to play for a while. Like, I played it for a little bit and then I left the campaign due to personality conflicts. Let's word it that way. Mm. AKA the DM was an ass. I created a character that was a half-orc knowledge cleric. And that was because she was raised by a Githyanki who was a priest of the cleric of knowledge. So she was raised by this in this realm, and she's like, of course I have to follow the footsteps and worship this god or this goddess. I don't remember who it was off the top of my head. And she wasn't super smart, but she tried her hardest. And she knew like 7 languages, but not very well at any of them. So she would like misinterpret words all the time when she was translating, or when she read things in a different language, she's like, oh, that's either cake or murder. I don't remember. But she was just like, she was a lot of fun to role play. I didn't like playing the cleric portion of it though, because I'm not like, I know a lot of some people who love playing clerics. They absolutely adore playing clerics. I'm not one of those people. And I don't know why I don't really enjoy playing clerics usually. I'm trying to find a way to get a cleric that I like, because I know there's like so many ways you could play a cleric in so many different domains and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I keep trying to make it work and make it enjoyable, which is why I'm trying the Blood Domain in my Tuesday game. Another one I want to try is the Twilight Domain to see if like maybe if I do something that's not just healy heals, kind of like a Jester Lavore type style of cleric, maybe I would enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah. I like Grave Clerics a lot. Grave Clerics are pretty great.
Yeah, I enjoy Grave Clerics. Those are fun. I enjoy the concept of them. I haven't played one, but I like Taliesin's Grave Cleric. He does a good job at it. And it's fun. Like, you could go so many different routes on that same type of character. It doesn't have to be just like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of the reasons why I was hesitant. Critical Role was kind of one of the reasons why I was hesitant to do a Hexblade Warlock. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to play it, but besides the fact that we had so many other melee characters, I was also kind of concerned that people would just be like, oh, you're just doing it because Ford's a Hexblade Warlock. And it's like, no, it just like it legitimately fit
the story. I don't know. I feel like it's more important to do whatever you want to do. And if people are going to listen to you and be like, oh, they're just playing Ford again, or, you know, that's on them. Like, if they don't want to involve themselves in the experience, then, you know, have a nice life. Maybe we're not for you.
As long as I don't go, you know what, I also made a deal with this weird water creature, and I also lost an eye, I have an eye, and I also became a paladin, then okay, I could see it.
yeah.
And I also have a country accent, like, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, hold up. There are way too many coincidences in here.
I hate that Matt Mercer effect where it's like, oh, I can't play this class because this guy in this season played this class. I'm like, no, if you want to play it, play it. Like,
well, it's not just because of him, but yeah, it was partially because of him. But like others, Hexblade has played so much. So I'm just like, do I really want to play it? Like, I've seen it played. Let me play something new.
I mean, it's a class. It exists. If you want to play it, play it. Yeah, I don't know. That's just me. That's my soapbox. I'm slowly getting off it right now. It's getting a little bit precarious. So
people should play what they are happy with playing with. And that is perfectly agreeable. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. As long as you're not that person, then, you know, whatever, you know.
I like playing things that are different, which is why I get excited when I can play a character that I've never tried before.
Yeah.
I know for a future game, I'm playing a half creature that is from an elf and an orc had a little baby, which, again, it's not homebrew, or that's homebrew, but still. But I was looking at playing Grung, which is not homebrew, and I was like, oh, that'd be so cool if I play a little Grung and a little frog guy. That'd be so cool. Let me do that one day. Because I haven't done that before, so why not? Let's play a Grung.
Yeah.
I just like trying new things and seeing if it sits. And but, like, I always lean towards Druid, Bard, and Monk are, like, my main go-tos.
Mm-hmm. Any particular reason?
Well, Druid, because animals. Bard, because I have slowly learned to love playing the face of the group, the one that actually does all the talking.
Yeah.
Because I accidentally try to be the face when I'm not and make a mess of things, aka my monk who just goes and makes a mess of things all the time. And then monk, because you just get to punch shit and, like, just be badass. Like, I played two or three monks recently. One is by my Friday game, who I absolutely adore. But I played a monk in a 3.5 game for Nature Check. And she was just literally the cutest thing. And I absolutely adore her. And I was like, when I was talking to the DM, I'm like, she's like, what kind of race do you want to play? And I was given the options of, like, what cities they would eventually come across, and that would determine where I came into play in the as a guest. So I picked the mouse folk one because it made a lot of sense. It was adorable, first off. That's why I picked it, to be completely honest. And then I was looking at all the options, and I'm like, I kind of want to play a monk mouse folk. She's like, okay, yeah, you could do that. And I was like, I want to protect something, because, like, the nature check is all about nature. It's all about actual knowledge of nature and in bugs and flowers and all of those things in science and the real world, and, like, tying that into your game. So I wanted to basically be self-imposed in charge in character over a section where I was protecting something. And we decided that it was pop bugs, which were based off of a real bug that had these beautiful shiny shells that were used for, like, beads and jewelry and stuff like that. But in the fantasy world, when they pop, a little black hole opens up, very small, very tiny, that goes to another dimension. And that's why they're called pop bugs.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's an interesting idea.
And that tied into the story for the other players. But my character was just like, no, you can't kill the pop bugs, or no, you can't pick these flowers. These are the only flowers that these pop bugs eat, which then that led to, like, an educational aspect of what other type of bugs only eat for one particular plant. And thus, when that plant becomes extinct, the bug will become extinct, or the butterfly or whatever will become extinct. But then, like, even, like, the mouse folk homes were based off of, like, actual ways that mice would live. Mice like to burrow and have little nests, so the mouse folks had just bigger nests, and that was their home, made out of clay and straw and stuff like that, and or grass. And in the game, she had, like, little notes, like, how one of the things that caught my eye, like, I had the character all in my mind, and then there was a note saying, when a mouse folk likes another mouse folk, they give them half of everything that they get that's shiny or food related. And then I'm just like, Cheryl, can I have a little girlfriend? And she's like, yes. I'm like, please make a female character in the game that's adorable. That's the girl that my character likes. I'm giving her all the shiny things that I find. And it was so cute, because she was, like, just super embarrassed when she went and saw the character and everything. And, like, that character growth was created through the learning of the lore, and then also the playing of the character. And my hope is that eventually they'll come back that way and maybe be invited to, like, a little mouse folk lesbian wedding.
Yeah, I guess to kind of springboard off that, you asked me initially if I've had to organically make something on the fly, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And how your environment shapes a character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I think there is an example of one of the ones that I could give about having to do exactly that as well, where the setting was kind of set. It was like 1066 in fake medieval Europe, like during the end of the Viking Age. Mm-hmm. It was like the last gasps of the tribes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, as they get either integrated or wiped out because, you know, everything that happened. That's a long part of history. Anyways, so we were doing that and my character was actually like, basically the only concept I had was she's a crazy axe woman who like isn't actually part of the tribe, but got the respect of the tribe. So now she's kind of sworn in. And the personality was just, she's crazy at first. And it kind of developed into a relationship with one of the other PCs where I became kind of like a mother figure. I played a female. Sometimes it's fun to like swip swap, you know what I mean? So like a lot of that aspects of her personality, the nuances, the being tolerant, younger behavior, that irrationality that comes with being kind of like a still in your kid age, but you're kind of growing into a person.
Mm-hmm.
Having like that level of doting and stuff like that, that developed as part of being exposed to that character and having those relationships. And I think a lot of things as well about the nature of character is that you don't make them in a vacuum in real life, really. You know, we are kind of the byproduct of our social interactions with the people that we choose to keep around us. And having that play into the nature of a role-playing character not only makes it a little bit more authentic, but actually kind of engrosses, kind of wraps you into the narrative a little bit more, in my opinion, because I think that there's a lot to be said about what we decide to project the world as opposed to what we do by ourselves, in the sense that I might be a radically different person by myself, in my opinion, you know, insofar as we understand ourselves. That's a whole nother philosophical topic that we probably don't have time for here in another podcast, in another life, and having that play out, you know, having a private versus public life in the nature of a role-playing character as well.
Mm-hmm. I love having secrets in character.
Yeah.
Not necessarily ones that are super deadly or anything, like I'm secretly trying to kill you, but like just the concept of you're ashamed of something, or like you feel like you need to hide something, or you have a dark past, or you've done something that you feel is wrong, that you don't want other people to know. And this happens in a lot of, I keep mentioning Critical Role, but it happened in Critical Role with a lot of the characters. But it's also fun to go the complete opposite, where you're playing like a character that's completely an open book.
Right, yeah.
But my favorite with characters, honestly, and this is something I do with almost every single one of my characters, is I don't know the full story. I'm very much a, if someone in game, and this happened actually in my Friday game yesterday, the other player and I have a history together. And that player made up a situation and was like, I remember when Tari did blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, fuck, you remember that still? Like, I just went with it because I was like, sure, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. As long as it's like not inappropriate, I'm completely fine with somebody making up something about my character as long as it's within theme of my character. And it just adds a little whimsy to the characters too, and a little bit of history and that yes and type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, like, there are things that I'll leave open-ended to the DM. Like, I say, I know this. These are the things I do not know. That is completely up to you how you want to take it. And sometimes that goes a very weird way.
Yeah.
And it is amazing.
Case in point, Azim Azan being a serial smut novelist, because I had the homebrew background writer, and I went into the town where that procced. The flavor text is basically there is a percentile chance that someone is familiar with your works and is a big fan, and they might give you favors as a result. So we were in a tavern, and I was running low on coin, and then like this random person walked up to me and was like, oh my god, are you Azim Azan, the writer of Lust of the Pirate Queen? And I'm just like in person, just burying my face in my hands. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me, Devin? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm also a journalist. Oh my God. That part where like, how do they have that many arms? And it just, it kind of downward spiraled into there. So.
But those are like the best parts though. Just like the random moments. And then I like the moments where it's like enough is given to you that it can go in so many directions and you make an assumption that is not the right assumption.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So that happens a lot with my characters. Like a lot of the times, depending on the character, but like my character from my Rissa or Tari, they both assume the worst of people because they've seen the worst of people. So if something happens, they're just like, I don't trust you. You're doing something fishy. This is clearly for blackmail, or this is clearly for whatever. Tari is a little bit, she doesn't trust anybody, but she's a little bit more like, okay, fine, whatever, we'll trust them. And then she's like, fucking told you. What did I tell you? I fucking told you, but nobody listens to Tari.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of fun to have that happen. So on that note, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and your stuff? Again, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, because I think that's the end of the episode. We've been talking for a good hour or so.
Yeah. Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, others, creatures of the night, it is I, Zoob the Mad. I'm representing the Broken Lords podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Lords Broken. We are currently sponsored, well, not sponsored, but our platform is currently Spreaker. You can find us there and any other major publishing platform. We have a link tree, which makes it really easy to find us. linktr.ee/thebrokenlords. I swear I'm working on a website. I know socks. I've been talking about it for the past few months. I am working on it. I swear.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Anyways, I must go back into my Eldritch Abyss and, you know, wish you the best of luck in your endeavors.
All right, let me do my outro really quick. And thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Go check out all the descriptions and details down below. Go give some love to Zoob and his friends and his show. Also, you can check us out on Twitter at Beholder to No One. And you can also check out our two new shows that will be starting soon. They each have their own Twitter accounts and they will have their own podcasts. We have Sound Control RPG, where we'll be doing a sci-fi Savage Worlds game starting soon. And Dice Before Dawn, which is our first show, will be a Vampire the Masquerade game. And I am super excited for both of these games so, so, so much. They will all be under the Beholder to No One umbrella, just on their own podcast, so we don't have a bajillion shows on this one since we already have three. You can also find our current actual plays alternating on Thursdays between our one shots and Clear Light. And if you want to talk to me and reach out, please do so on Twitter or check out our website at beholdertono1.com. Thanks. Keep being awesome. Bye.